From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that by building the Backyard Advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And today on the show, we have the leader or one of the leaders of an institution right here in our backyard that is really, I think, reshaping the way we think about what Sacramento can be. And of course, they're known for, or they're becoming more known for entrepreneurship. We're going to be talking to Mike Reza. He is the Vice President of University Advancement at Sac State University. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Mark.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you are here, because I want to hear from your perspective, maybe what your role is a little bit at Sac State, and then we can kind of get in and talk about, you know, it's back to school time and what does that mean? So I think it's perfect timing to have you on the show, because we're all thinking about education at the moment and what's going back to school going to feel like this year. So,
well, it's interesting. I don't think most people think entrepreneurship and think a big bureaucracy like higher education and a state university, but in a lot of ways we operate like an entrepreneurial organization, and so especially given the enterprise that we run. So as vice president of University Advancement, that means I oversee all of our fundraising efforts and alumni engagement efforts, and so that's a pretty big job for us. But how I look at it personally is we're one of the revenue generating sides of the institution. You know, we have a few buckets that generate revenue: tuition dollars, events, philanthropy, and grants and research opportunities. And so when we look at what we want to do, we want to be entrepreneurial. We want to inspire giving, inspire support to support our students. You know, we are at Sac State, we employ more than 3,000 people. You know, we have nearly a $400 million a year budget. We have a $1.3 billion impact in the Sacramento region, and that's annually. And so, you know, we're one of the largest employers here in the region, and we're proud of that. But it's also, I think, for us, is, again, as we think about the job at hand, the mission is educating our students, but how we do that is through having an ROI on the investment that our students make as customers oftentimes. Mm-hmm. And that ROI is going to be, are they employed? Do they have career ready jobs? Are they ready to enter the workforce? Is a big part of that.
Yeah. So I'm on the Carlson Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship. And so on that committee, if you will, there's mm-hmm. probably 30 of us or something like that, and maybe more, depending on, some people don't show up for every meeting, but I'm pretty religious about showing up. And there's typically about half faculty and half entrepreneurial type mm-hmm. people. And it's interesting to work with or alongside people that really are seeing things maybe from a more of a government perspective. They probably think that about us too, as entrepreneur guys. But we're beginning to gel together, and I give a lot of the credit to Cameron Law, who mm-hmm. is the executive director, but then Dale Carlson for having the vision for what this could become, because it's not only great for Sac State, it's great for the entire region. And I think that's one of the things about we sometimes lose perspective of is how important an institution like Sac State can be for the entire region. I mean, you brought up jobs and economic growth and just the amount of, you know, what you create, but the lasting effect mm-hmm. of what you do every year is it's like impact that's almost like invisible, but I'm invested into so many companies that, oh, that's a Sac State grad. Yeah. A lot of Sac State grads are in our portfolio. So it's cool to see that kind of impact that happens like year after year after year. There's another Sac State grad, building the business.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting too, because in the region, I think it's one in every 17 folks in the greater Sacramento region is a Sac State alum.
Oh, wow.
We have 150,000 alums in this region, 300,000 in total. And so that means our alums are local. They stay here. They live here. They want to create their jobs here, build their families here. And that's the long-term investment side. I also think that the reason I think, from an entrepreneurship standpoint, that's so interesting about us is that our students are first-generation college students, a lot of them, 30% first-gen, 50% are Pell eligible, 40, a little under 50%, meaning like, you know, they're basically low-income students. And so they're hungry. There's grit, there's determination, and there's that's something kind of from an entrepreneurial spirit standpoint. It's a group of, I think, folks that come in and look at things differently.
Yeah.
Right. And they're asking these questions about how do we change the world? How do we change what we do? How do we change this widget and make it better? And those are, I think, that's kind of the ethos of Sacramento. You know, I moved here a year ago and trying, you know, as I came here, I was like, this is such a great region. And it's, but it's this kind of like, it's a big city, small town feel, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people say, I mean, I sit on that board with you at the Carlson Center. Mm-hmm. And you know, we run into each other at events and we know the same people, you know, your daughter, Ashley, sold us our house, helped us buy our house. It's a
small
world.
And my good buddy, Rob Fernandez, Diamond Pool, shout out. Yeah. Great if you need a pool, Diamond Pools. He just finished your pool.
Finished our pool. Brittany, your daughter-in-law, helped us design her backyard. Oh, I mean, it's just a community. And I think that's one of the things that makes this kind of entrepreneurial spirit work is that, you know, when you know the person to the left of you and the right of you, and you see each other at the grocery store, you're just more committed, I think, mm-hmm. right?
I totally agree. So I want to talk about Sac State and what's changing, what's in the process of changing, what the vision looks like. But before I dive into that, because that's, I think, super interesting to me at least, I'm also kind of curious about Sac State with the demographics here in Sacramento in terms of, like, I didn't realize it was 17% of Sacramentans have gone to Sac State.
1 in 17.
Oh, so 1 in 17. About, oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Not 7. Yeah,
yeah, not 17%. Five, 1 in 17. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that'd be 6%. 5%. Yeah. Still, that's a lot. But when I think of Sac State, for, you know, I've lived here my whole life, I think of people that come out and get good jobs. Some of them are business people, as I mentioned. But the net worth of Sacramento is sort of a lot of small guys, right? A lot of small, medium-sized businesses. There aren't these huge corporations like you might have in some cities. So really, you have a lot of people that have stayed here from Sac State that they're still here, but they're not necessarily super high net worth. They're not the ultra high net worth. So getting the super large donor might not come just from the alum, yeah, because they're maybe not in a position to write $10 million checks or $50 million checks, that kind of thing. So how is this different than maybe, let's call it a Stanford or a Harvard or maybe even a state college somewhere else that's, you know, in oil country or something?
Well, I moved here from Oregon. So I was at University of Oregon. So mm-hmm. we had a well-known, significant donor who transformed the institution, right? And Phil Knight. And those donors are, you know, they're incredible. What they can do, the impact they can have, and the scale. But it's also true that a place like Sacramento, I think, has a lot of people invested in the success of a place like Sacramento State. You know, we are the only four-year public institution in the state, in the city. Mm-hmm. You know, Davis is a little bit further down the road, and they make a tremendous investment and do great work for this region as well. But we really don't, you know, like you go to like a Boston, and there's 14 universities within a stone's throw of each other, right? That are all doing great things. And so, you know, we really help drive, I think, the economy. And one of the biggest things, I think, is it's a collective. You know, if you look at how this region has worked, it's people coming together, whether it was Keeping the Kings here or building Golden One Center. It was a community movement. There wasn't one individual that just said, I'm going to make this mine. And I think that creates ownership.
True.
And I think that's actually one of the best parts about the region is that we all have the ability to have ownership. And I always think is, you know, it could be a $100 gift, a $1,000 gift, a $1 million gift, or a $100 million gift. They all have impact and to that person making the gift. And our job, I think, is to really make people feel good about what they're doing to support the institution. But even more so have folks understand how it's helping push us forward. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think, and the us is collective as well. It's, you know, we have 31,000 students on our campus and we want to see them graduate and have great jobs here and transform their lives. But, you know, when we think about entrepreneurship, oftentimes entrepreneurs don't graduate from college. You know, when you look at these folks that like they have a year and then they go off and start a company, and we want to like find people where they are. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot of students that come to us not right out of high school. that come to us out after working for 10 years. And that's the kind of institution we are. So, yeah. You know, we're not going to be Stanford, but we're not trying to be Stanford. Yeah. We're trying to be the best Sacramento State. And I think that's good for us in the region.
Well, it's interesting to think about, like, if I'm trying to like put myself in your shoes for a second, you're overseeing this, what's called sales and marketing effort. And is that a fair way to look at it? Just kind of like broadly, sales, marketing, branding, this kind of stuff. That's your realm. And, you know, when you're operating a business, let's say I put my business hat on, usually I'm thinking like, okay, am I a direct to consumer type brand or am I more B2B? And on some of these B2B type sales, the sales, I guess, timing, it can take a year to get a big sale, or maybe even longer. But yet, on a direct to consumer type thing, you spend some money on branding and maybe some direct marketing and things like that, and try to get those $100, $200, $400, $500 checks. So how do you divide up, like, how you think about your resources in terms of like going after the smaller guys, mm-hmm. or, you know, attacking the high net worth?
Is data. I mean, honestly, my job is data analytics, actually. Just like one of the fun parts about my job is I get to work with a lot of really successful people and learn from them. I've been doing this 20 plus years. And as I continue to, you know, do the work, and I met a guy who was an executive with Wells Fargo once. And he said, you know, everyone thinks Wells Fargo, we're a banking organization. He's like, we're a tech company. He goes, we deal in X's and O's. And it's like, if you open your app, you expect to see that money there, but that's a technology thing. For us, we're moving to that place. It's relationships mm-hmm. are critical, but I have to have my team understand where to go fishing, right? And that's data. It's so, you know, if you're a donor, I need to know what you're giving to. I need to know about you. We need to be like Amazon, mm-hmm. right? Amazon knows what you want before you want it.
Right.
And so we need to understand our customer, which is our students, our alumni, this region, the people in the region that can help support us. And so that's a big part of it because, you know, we have 300,000 alums. Half of them are here in the region. I have a team of 40 plus people.
Oh, wow.
Right. And only about, you know, 15 of them are directly dealing with, you know, individuals every day. And there's a lot of operations, a lot of the research side of it, of the house. And so we truly operate like a business. And most, you know, I am also the executive officer of our foundation. And so we have about $130 million in assets that I'm also responsible for as well, and to grow, right? And so as you bring in more revenue, we are able to grow more of our endowment and those assets under management. And as you know, you get access to more capital, you have more access to invest it differently.
Right,
and
have right.
And so, you know, like your Harvards are investing in startups. They're investing in at private equity. We aren't there, but our goal is to continue to grow so we can diversify our portfolio just like any money manager would.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I didn't realize you had 40 teammates, if you will. Yeah. I can see how you have enough capacity to, like a Wells, not like Wells Fargo, but similar to your Wells Fargo, I guess, comparison is like, hey, you've got a direct-to-consumer brand, and then you have a, you know, you're going after the enterprise sales and, yep. you know, that kind of thing as well. So, okay, interesting that you guys have that kind of capacity, I suppose.
Well, and I think the one thing you mentioned that I just want to mention is that the average, so we call it a major gift, right? And that's just our term, but what it really is a threshold where my team is focusing on those higher level capacity donors, right? And if you look at giving campaigns and a lot of these business fundraising offices, 20 to 30 families and organizations are the ones that are 80% of your gifts.
Okay.
Right. And so you've got to be hyper focused on those folks and giving them the attention they need, the access they need, because those are the people that on the day in and day out, like if you don't get that gift from them that year, you can not hit your numbers. Right.
Right. Right.
And they have tremendous impact. But then at the other side of that, and those on the average larger gift takes about 2 to 3 years to close. From the time you bring up an idea and we start having a conversation and introducing you to our deans and connecting the dots for you of how your gift can have impact, because truly a lot of people think of it as an investment, not even a gift, right? Mm-hmm. It's when you're talking six figures or seven figures for someone and you don't get a tangible return, you don't buy a home, you're not buying a car, you're getting you're getting a feeling of, I am moving something forward that's bigger than me.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I don't know of a lot of examples, but I do have an awareness of the Carlson Center, and I know that that was a very large check, and I do think that you know, the Dale Carlson and his wife Katie put forward, but it was a purpose driven. Exactly. It wasn't like, hey, I'm going to write a check because I went to Sac State. That might have been what got the conversation started. Correct. But now it's like, how can I do something that's sustainable and long lasting? And that's obviously happening. So, okay, I can imagine other conversations. He's not the lone conversation. Other people want to have similar impact in maybe a certain area that they really care about.
Yeah. And it's like anything, it's alignment, right? You know, if you look at any business, it's, are you growing? Is there scale? Is there alignment with not only my personal values? Like, you know, if you're looking at a company, you're evaluating, where will those dollars go? What will they do? What's the outcome? Same thing, same language we have to talk about. I've got to go and get the ROI on that conversation and say, okay, you know, if you're going to give $1 million to us, what will those dollars do? How will we use it? Do we have the capacity? I ask that question a lot. Like, not every gift is a good one to accept, because if we can't deliver on what we're promising, then we shouldn't take the dollars.
Yeah.
You know, because we're not only doing a disservice to the donor, but we're doing a disservice to our organization and reputation.
Interesting. One idea that just kind of came to mind for me, you were talking about assets under management, $130 million at the moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not really large enough to, if just for our listeners out there, if you need a pretty big number for assets under management when you decide to put money into something like venture capital or something right. that's got a lot more risk. You need to have a good return, a solid return, and, you know, and venture capital can kind of be really good for that, but it can also be high risk. Exactly. So, but thinking about that, now that you brought it up, I might as well float this idea that I can't shake at the moment. I could see a fundraising, or a fund, a Sac State fund that was under your assets under management that, people might want to put money into if you were going to invest into Sac State grads. So, hey, listen, well, here's our ask for you. You're a small business, you know, you're a business person that had some success. You sold your business. You went to Sac State. You know, we need more of you in Sacramento. So help us make some of those early stage investments by contributing in that way. That's a way for you to put your mark on it because you believe in entrepreneurship. You lived it. And that way, you know, let us take $1 million
right.
of our 130 and, you know, allocate it that way. And we'll raise a special fund for that. Have you thought about that? Or is that
absolutely. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, when I first got here, I think one of the things for me was kind of helping as an organization, we're maturing, right? So organizations go through a lot of phases, just like startups, right? And so we're at that phase, I think, of, you know, it was capacity building, mm-hmm. And I had to change some operations. And so for me, it was very operational first year. Now we're able to start thinking about what do we do in the future? What's our strategy in aligning that with the organization? We have a new president who's been here 2 years. We have a new provost who's been here 4 months. And the provost, most people don't know what a provost does.
I was going to ask, what's a provost? Yeah. I'm a C student from Oakmont High School. I have no idea.
You know, it's one of those terms, but basically the provost is the leader of our academic unit. So she's the COO basically. Right. Okay. And so, you know, our academic enterprise is 60%+ of our budget. Right. So educating students, our core mission, and that's the big part of it. And so she manages, you know, the majority of our academic budgets and sets the vision and course. And so as we think about our where we're growing and how we grow as an organization, that's where we are really focusing a lot of effort as well. We hear a lot about athletics. Athletics mm-hmm. is critical. We've, you know, because athletics, a lot of us say, is the front porch to the institution, helps build the brand, helps build the identity. But truly where a lot of our resources go is that side of it. And so on my side is to make sure that our folks are aligned, because again, misalignment creates missed opportunity, right?
Okay.
And so if we're not aligned and we aren't moving all and rowing in the same direction, you're writing a check and it may not do the things. Like, so if you want to invest in venture capital, for instance, we have to make sure we can have the ability to accept it. So we work with a money manager, and we have the people mm-hmm. on our team, our board. We have a board. I have my bosses on the foundation side, and making sure we have the folks on the board who are like, okay, that's a great idea. Now tell me how we're going to execute on it.
Right. Execution of that might not really move the needle very far. So it's more of one of those entrepreneurial, like, shiny object ideas as we're talking about this, to attract maybe broaden out your high net worth people to get them in the door.
And people that are open to more risk, right? Yeah. Like, as a portfolio side, you know, we talk to our folks and I'm like, we have certain buckets of money we can't risk mm-hmm. because those dollars are promised to our students to do certain things, and legally we can't risk those dollars. Our endowment is one that's a little bit more risky. It's meant to grow over time. And that gets invested in the market in a different way. And then they're like, I've been at places, other institutions that do exactly what you said, that allow for a little bit riskier investment, understanding there's less of a return side, but there's much more of an upside. We just have to be transparent with our donors as well, and then build that capacity. But it's absolutely something we're thinking about.
All right, well, let's talk about, since you're, as I call it, selling Sac State. That's my terminology.
That sounds like a TV show.
Selling Sac State. Yeah, we can make that a reality show. But if that's sort of what, you know, you're explaining the great things about Sac State, and you touched on the new leadership, you touched on athletics, you touched on, let's call it, curriculum or the education piece. And I also want to, as I think about Sac State, I think about the future opportunities. I know you're going to have a campus in Roseville. Mm-hmm. I know there's discussion about a campus downtown. Yes. So there's all this kind of cool picture that could be painted. So maybe we'll break down some of those areas a little bit, painting the picture on some of the most interesting parts of what's going on at Sac State.
Well, one of the reasons I came here and chose, Placer, where we live, was because of the campus that we're building here. Mm-hmm. It truly is a chance to be transformative for this region.
The one that you're building in Roseville.
Here in Roseville locally. And so I think we've been talking about that campus for 20 years, from what I understand, mm-hmm. as happening. And I think it's happening in juxtaposition of a lot of other things that are happening that I want to talk about. So one thing happening is there are a lot less college age kids. And so what we're seeing in higher education is, and people just don't have as many kids as they used to. And a lot of families are choosing not to have children at all. And so what it means is our core customer base is getting smaller for all of higher education. So there's been a trend where universities are closing, universities are consolidating, universities are losing students, right? In Northern California, in the public school side, we are one of, I think, two institutions that are growing. So this year, last year, we welcomed our largest incoming class ever. This year will be our second largest incoming class ever, because we didn't beat our number from last year. Mm-hmm. We'll have more students than we've ever had on campus.
And I have to assume these are people that already live here, because to my knowledge, we're still kind of that commuter school, to my knowledge, or at least that's been some image over the years, is, you know, somebody from Roseville might commute to, you know, Sacramento, go to Sac State. Because we don't have the big draw from the sports and some of this other stuff, a research university necessarily, people aren't like moving to Sacramento to go to Sac State in droves. At some level, I'm sure they do.
And that's part of the change, I think, is mm-hmm. kind of in the perception, right? For us, we're actually starting to see more people choose to move here. Okay. First, from in-state. So one of the things in-state wise is, if you look at, you know, I went to Long Beach State. I grew up in LA in Orange County. The cost of living here is so much different than if I was, you know, than going there. And so we actually didn't have capacity. Again, capacity is critical. So we're building dorms, we're creating residence halls, we're doing master lease agreements with local apartment buildings, because we want our students to be on campus. Part of that is because we know that if you live on campus your first year, you're getting access to resources. If you come home, you have no access to the resources of going to the library because you need to study it. 10 p.m., you're not going to get support for your mental health, which is a big challenge for a lot of our students. And so what we want to do is have them get access to those resources. And the data shows, if you live on campus your first year, you're much more likely to graduate, right? And so we're working through how to ensure, like, all of our students have an opportunity to live on campus, local and folks that are coming from other areas. And
is the master lease idea, that seems... kind of simple, but have we not been doing it in the past?
No, I mean, I think that what you said was who we were. We were the school that, it was a commuter school, right? And so our model and where we're going now is we want to be a school that's a residential campus. And particularly where housing, you know, we have a lot of students that are food insecure and housing insecure, right? And so if we can offer housing at a discounted rate, or because you're, you know, you have two to three kids in a room potentially, or you're, you know, you're sharing resources, it brings the cost down. And so we're able, and we're able to do that in a safe environment versus what's, quite honestly, you know, we hear situations where there's eight kids in an apartment. And that's not a good place to be sometimes. And so we want it to be a healthy situation. And so there, again, if you keep your students at the core of who you are, what we're trying to accomplish, you can create really innovative solutions. And so we want to change that perception. I think just like Sacramento, I think Sacramento is changing the perception of who we are. We're the 20th largest media market in the country. We are a really big, big city. But like the idea of a plaster campus, for instance, being, you know, 40, I live here, 40 minute drive down 80, in 10 years, that's going to be an hour and a half drive and no one's going to do it. So what is, why having a campus here is critical is because if we're going to have the workforce in the fastest growing region in the state, fastest growing county in the state, it's also the fast, one of the fastest growing, if not the fastest growing, for children under, like families with children moving to this region. You know, we have Bosch that just moved here. There's a lot of industry here, but who's going to be, who are the people that are going to work in those industries? So we're looking at that and saying, this region's growing. We want to invest here. And that's through partnership. So it's with Sierra College through a partnership, partnership with the county as well. So Placer County is helping build our first building. That's our plan. And for our forensics lab, because there is, it's one, again, one of the fastest growing professions in the region. And it's almost impossible to find enough folks to hire. We have internship programs here that we're getting our students out to intern here during the summer. We want them to live here. We want them to stay here and stay in this region. And so that's really part of that motivation.
What is the Roseville campus? Where are we at now? And what's it, you know, when it's complete, what's it, what are we going to have there?
Well, have you driven by it at all recently?
I probably have, but I haven't, I can't say that I can recognize.
It's interesting, right? I mean, the idea is kind of astounding, right? It's like, I think 6,000 homes.
It's in West Roseville.
Yeah, over by the Recology, or by the waste, by the dump over and so, you know, that's where the, is it the Wave Park is going to go? That they're talking about. And the, so it'll be a mixed use development. We're going to be one of the anchor anchors of that. And that was through some philanthropy that got us the land. And so we have 300 acres of a much larger project. But right now, it's, again, it's infrastructure. Like, it's, there are roads that are there. The sewer lines are built. So it's building the infrastructure for the first building.
And if people don't know where the dump is, it's kind of by the casino. You might know where Thunder Valley Casino is. You're on Highway 65, maybe going toward Lincoln or Yuba City or something like that. You also use Highway 65 if you're going to the Galleria. So you keep going a little bit further and you come across Thunder Valley, and it's out in that area. So you have 300 acres to work with at the moment. And so,
we're going to go building by building, to be honest with you, because again, I think there's kind of two ways to grow, right? And if you have a lot of resources, you can pour them into these kinds of projects. But you mentioned downtown, we have a stadium project. We have a number of capital projects that take a lot of resources. And so what our strategy is going to be to make sure we can do all of those things, but it's not going to be, because all of them are equally important, but to be perfectly honest, they're almost like these kind of once in a generation opportunities. And when they come across your door, you go, you, sometimes you might go like, can we do this? Yes. Should we do this? Yes. We're going to find the way to make it happen, because if you turn it, if you look back 20 years, they're going to be like someone going like, what did those guys, why didn't they make the right decision 20 years ago?
Yeah, that's interesting to think about how to, you know, whether, to, what things to do, let's call it incrementally, and which things to like, no, we should just get as much resources as we can and put it over here. And I mean, I'm wondering like sort of how do you wrestle with that kind of decision, because they are all important, but you know, you want to get it done in our lifetime.
Well, yeah. And I think it's like every business, the conditions change and you have to adjust, right? I think flexibility and adaptability are critical. You know, if you would have told me a year ago, interest rates are going to be different than they were when we started these projects, the cost to build was going to be where we are now. You know, that those two things alone create a different set of conditions, right?
Okay.
We have less, you know, when we think about that alone, and then the downtown project was one, again, that because of opportunity, we're like, wow, we have an opportunity to really leverage the fact that we have a you know, who we are as a state. You know, it's the fourth largest economy in the world, and the state capital is a place where lots of things happen, and we happen to have a strong competency in a lot of the those areas. And so what could we do if we had a downtown space and the state is saying, hey, we have a building and we have land, and how do we leverage that?
Yeah.
And so it's these, you know, as you know, you don't know where the partnership's going to take you when you start having a conversation, and then you go, wow, like this could be really amazing for us. Yeah. We're going to find a way. And so that's a big part of it.
Sounds cool, but yeah. I still think of the entrepreneur that is chasing too many shiny objects.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm here talking about a $1 million fund, and you got these massive things that are, you know, sitting in front of you, almost like you can't get distracted with the small stuff.
That's why the partnerships are critical.
Okay.
If we were doing if we were going into this plaster campus on our own, it wouldn't be possible. So without Sierra College, without the county, we couldn't make that happen. Right. And so what it is trying to find out what are the things we all need and how do we work together, and which takes longer oftentimes, mm-hmm. but I think you have a better product, particularly when you're bringing in organizations that have, you know, from a state side, from the county side. And what we want to do is create a place where when we build this campus, it's focused on community. Mm-hmm. We don't want to come in and say, this is what Placer County needs. We want Placer County to tell us, here's what we need and here's how we're going to thrive, because that's going to build, I think, the best institution for all of us.
Yeah, definitely when you're a partner in something, you've got some skin in the game and so on. You feel like an owner, you act like an owner, and the people that, you know, carry on the legacy at whatever, City of Roseville or Sierra College, they're going to care about Sac State indefinitely, basically.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, it's, and again, because it's a small community, I mean, Willie Duncan at Sierra College is one of the greatest leaders that I've met. His daughter also works on my team.
Is that right? Oh, yeah. I love Willie.
And so again, you know, it's just like we're building a relationship, right? And again, it's that relationship of trust. And so what we're doing downtown, same thing, what we're doing from a football perspective was we're trying to leverage resources because, you know, when we're in a resource constrained environment, and if you're looking at the state budget and the projections, it's not very pretty right now for a public organization. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, about 60% of our funding comes from the state. And so what we have to do is be more entrepreneurial, because if you look at, again, from a funding perspective, as we are growing, resources are going to be more constrained, and we need other ways to generate revenue. So that's how we're looking at these projects as well, is like, these are investments that in the long term are going to have an ROI that goes back to our core mission. Okay. So in downtown, we're thinking about, you know, potential hotel space and event center space and revenue producing space, of course, with our academic spaces. When we're thinking about what we're doing here is how do we leverage this campus in Placer to have some produced revenue generation that supports us as well, because we have to create these other revenue streams. And that's even the athletic side is athletics can help us generate revenue if we do it correct. We always hear these stories of like football and how much it costs, and it's these sports subsidize other areas, and that's all true. But for us, we're already spending that money. We're undervalued. So if you look at us from a business perspective, you know, we have the chance for a lot more eyeballs to come in. And that's the key for any of these deals is TV contracts, sponsorship dollars. It's leveraging the fact that we're in this media market and we are going to invest in our facilities to support it.
Well, I think Luke Wood is, he's making a lot of change and he's making a lot of headlines. But on the sports side, it's interesting to think about the people that he has brought in to coach basketball, coach football, and those are the ones that come to mind. Mm-hmm. Top-notch personalities, people with track records, people that are known in their field. And I have to imagine that's attracting a different kind of athlete as well. You've got Mike Bibby as your basketball coach. That's going to attract a different athlete, I assume.
Absolutely. We have the number one recruiting class in the football on the FCS side. We have you know, a four-star basketball player that rated four stars, which we've never had that level of player. It's going to be an exciting time and fun. And I think this is a sports town at the end of the day. I think it's a town that rallies around athletics. If you look at the Kings and look at what they're doing and, you know, sell out crowds. And I was, when I came here, I was like, this is the loudest arena I've ever been in.
Oh, it's crazy.
Oh, it's insane.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's like, we just need a great basketball team because we got a great fan base.
Great fan base. And, you know, people will show up. And I think that's, you know, that's one of the things that's, I think, the potential for us.
Yeah, right? For sure. I think people show up for Sac State if we put together the right product, I suppose, in the right arena.
We have to make it a place where you want to go, you want to spend your money, that, you know, all of those things. And that's a big part of it. And look, I don't control what happens on the court. Mm-hmm. That's Mike and Brennan's job. You know, our job is to make sure we get folks there and get people excited about what we're trying to accomplish, because they need support as well. And that's a big part of it. But it's exciting.
Are you involved in NIL is this name, image, and likeness, and it's become this business where people are the athletes, the top echelon of athletes, you know, are really utilizing this as their own business, mm-hmm. right? So they're a little more flexible on, you know, they start off at, let's call it Oregon, and then, you know, could get recruited to go to Sac State, right? Or the other way around. And, you know, so they're a little, there's a lot of money associated with all of that. Are you involved in the, you know, the funding for these NIL, I guess, recruitment opportunities?
So I'll say yes and no. Okay. And I think there's kind of, like, when we talk about being adaptable, mm-hmm. This is one space that has changed three or four times in the last year, in terms of how it works. And so right now we're at a place where revenue share is a thing.
Okay.
And what that means is that, you know, for decades, there's a guy that had their woman that had their jersey on sale, in the bookstore, they didn't receive any profits from that, right? That's name, image, and likeness. Name, image, and likeness is like, hey, you get, you know, if you're a local car dealership and you want the starting quarterback to sponsor your car dealership, we can pay you now, right? Okay. Name, image, and likeness is around those kind of marketing opportunities. How it's created, how it played out in big time college sports may not have worked that way all the time, but it was outside the university.
But in other universities, and I figured it was this way at Sac State too, mm-hmm. is that there was this sort of pot of money that you could almost like incentivize players to come to your school based upon, you could tap into that pot of money that's already been raised. And then
that was through those collectives. Those mm-hmm. were like these outside almost booster groups mm-hmm. that were able to go out and sign contracts. They weren't coming through the university. There were these outside dollars. Today, we're at a place where a donor can give to a program.
Okay.
So it's like, hey, I want to give to support the student athletes, and I want to support at Sacramento State, and I want to support the football team, the basketball team, golf, tennis, whatever it is. And I want to, and then the coaches make those decisions on how to share that money with the players, right? So that's the biggest difference. So that, as of like 2 months ago, yes, I am very much involved in that, because the university now can accept those donations to kind of the general fund programs. And then the coaches have the discretion, the athletic director, of how those dollars are going to be utilized. But you still can give to a collective. We have a collective as well. If you're like, hey, I want our starting bat point guard to, you know, come on the show, and they might say, hey, I need $5,000, Mark, you know, like that's how that works. And so it's a different bucket of money, basically. Okay. And so what we're trying to do is help educate folks, and I'm educating myself, because it continuously changes. The laws are changing, lawsuits, executive orders, like it's mm-hmm. all evolving quickly. And, you know, a year from now, we could have this conversation and it could look completely different.
Okay. So give me your prediction for the football team this year. You guys got the new coach, you got players coming in. Well, are we gonna beat UC Davis?
Listen. My boss, President Wood, is much more bold than I am to make those predictions. I will say this. I had a chance to go to our scrimmage last weekend, or 2 weekends ago, and man, these kids are bigger, faster, stronger than they've ever been here.
Now they were scrimmaging against themselves.
Okay. And I've been around some very successful programs and I saw these guys and I was like, we're going to compete.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put my coach out there like that. but I do expect a really great season. And the great part about Coach Marion is he's been the guy who's had the number two offense in the country last year at UNLV. He was the offensive coordinator there, and they had the number two, I think number one or two offense for 2 years. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah.
The offense that we run, we have quarterbacks competing from each other. I mean, we had a guy that came from Georgia as a quarterback.
Wow.
That's Sac State, right? We have, I think 40 guys that played minutes at Power Four schools.
Wow.
At a place like Sac State, right? And so those kind of, that level of talent, I also used to coach high school basketball, so I also know that talent doesn't win all the games, and coaching, and sometimes it's luck and all of these other things. And so, but we're going to compete. And I will say this, those guys are hungry. They're ready to go.
All right, so let's get into the curriculum a little bit, because we don't have a lot of time left. And curriculum is not necessarily my favorite subject, but I do think it's interesting this way that education in general is changing, right? So we all have access to new technology, and the way we learn or where we get our education from is sort of in the middle of a potentially a pretty enormous shift.
Mm-hmm.
What are you seeing? Are you feeling that like AI and things like that are already beginning to have an effect on the curriculum?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's having an effect on everything. I asked my team, I'm like, how do we start to operationalize this in our world? And I said, we have a team meeting next week, and I said, I want all of you to think about five ways you're going to use AI in your jobs to transform what we do. And I want to come from the bottom up,
mm-hmm.
because I want to know, like, how are you using it already? And what are those things that I'm like, oh, we should operationalize that as a new way to do things for our organization. Same things are happening, I think, in higher education. Our students are always ahead of us. So that's one of the things, is that, the academy takes time, because academics and faculty have learned how to do something a certain way. And so if you look at history, when the calculator was invented, everyone said, well, what happened to the slide rule? Like, the world's going to change. We can't do this. Then the internet was invented. Typewriters to computers and keyboards. It's another change, and it's another thing that will revolutionize how education happens.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And we want to be at the forefront of it. So as a system, the Cal State system has invested, I just read about this today, actually, and we're already using it, but all of our students, faculty, and staff have access to ChatGPT, for instance, the paid subscription. And it's an enterprise-level model, and we're actively teaching our folks how to use it and be more productive. How to use it, that's one way. We're also looking at it. We just had our fall address with President Wood, and he said we need to adapt, right? Like, and the main reason is, if you're going to hire our students, they need to be prepared to work in today's workforce, not yesterday's. And that's the key for us, is like, we need to make sure they're career ready. And all the data is showing that entry-level jobs are going to be much harder to come by because of AI. And if you don't know how to use this tool, and if you're not using this tool, my 6-year-old daughter asked ChatGPT, how do I spell this name? And tell me more about it. It's going to be ubiquitous.
Yes.
And so it's absolutely changing everything. And we want to be at the forefront of it.
I'm kind of curious, though. It brings up, I've met some of the teachers at Sac State, but I would probably say this for anybody who is working for a state agency. Are they fearful of their jobs? Because you hear about that in today's workforce, where I don't think people should necessarily be fearful for their job. I think it should give them more capacity to do all kinds of great things. But there's obviously a group of people that are fearful for their jobs. And I would imagine that a government agency is probably, fits into that, generally speaking.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of fear. It's a fear of the unknown. And I think a lot of it also is, how do you use it?
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing adaptions in higher ed where, folks are going back to old school, blue books, and writing things down, and when they do a test, right? Because a part of, I think, the education side is, learning how to use a tool, but it's also learning. And so if the tool is going to be a substitute for learning, then what are we teaching our kids? Right. I think that's a big part of it too, is we have children, we have kids that learn, kids, they're young adults in college. I need to stop saying kids. But we're teaching them how to learn and how to learn differently, but we have to teach our faculty that too.
And I think we can,
and as you, and you know that you've been working with faculty and in a lot of ways, and entrepreneurship is even the idea of teaching entrepreneurship, right? Like that, even that idea, I've heard entrepreneurs say, well, how do you teach that? You know, like, tell me more about what that looks like. And when you dig in, you start to see that we're teaching scale, we're teaching organizational theory, we're teaching management, which are all tools. And as an entrepreneur, most entrepreneurs don't get that skill set. And they come in and then it'd be like, well, wouldn't it be great if I learned that, if I knew that thing before I had to do it?
Well, I think it's interesting that we're thinking about the Carlson Center as you were speaking about that. So it's half faculty roughly on the committee, or I guess it's the advisory board. And this is probably more of the forward leaning thinking people at Sac State is what I'm assuming at some level. But we're still getting feedback of like what the culture is like within the faculty from these people. And I thought it was interesting that Dale Carlson was insightful enough to call it the Carlson Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship. And I thought, okay, whatever, when I first got there to help out, I'm more of the entrepreneurial risk-taking and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, at a institution like the Carlson Center or someone like the Carlson Center, the word entrepreneurship can almost be a little bit scary or intimidating to faculty or for somebody that's, you know, maybe working for a government agency where innovation is sort of like, that's not scary. We all should be innovative in our jobs. We should all think innovatively and use our imagination. So I think Dale was ahead of his time in deciding that's how he wanted to paint the vision. And I think he's probably having a bigger impact because of that.
Well, and I think too, he was ahead of his time because I think what he realized was having a center that's set outside of the academic college allowed for someone who could be in art to come into the Carlson Center and work with someone who's an engineer and work with someone who's a marketer. And when you think about the kind of, you know, you think about Apple and the iPhone, for instance, and design thinking and the idea of being entrepreneurial was if you work with an engineer and you go down this one vertical, you wouldn't have come up with the beauty of the iPhone, right? And it would have been functional, but maybe it wouldn't have looked as good. And so you've got to bring these people together, I think, to create the businesses of the future. And I think that's the genius of it, because if it was in the business school, it would have been access to business majors, which is where a lot of entrepreneurship folks are. But entrepreneurship is so much more than business.
For sure.
And so, you know, when you're seeing someone who's a mechanical engineer who's working on something and they're just like, their brain is so focused on that side of it, they don't know how to go out and think about marketing that. But and they are an entrepreneur. They're like, I want to create this thing, but you've got to build a team. You've got to have, you know, so that's where I think the magic's going to happen for the Carlson Center is going to be by bringing in all these folks that are all wanting to think entrepreneurially and work towards something bigger than themselves.
Okay. So I got two more questions. Number one. Okay. So on the curriculum side, which of the schools, if you will, or degrees, I don't really know the way to frame the question, but there's all these different things you can get your degree in or specialize in within Sac State. Which ones are you most proud of? I mean, what are you best known for and what are you most proud of?
I think I'm most proud. I mean, this gets me in trouble with my faculty.
Okay.
You're going to get me, you know. What would somebody else say?
What would you say you're most known for in terms of like success?
So here's what's funny is we're actually having that conversation right now as an organization because it, like you said, is it's really difficult to focus on everything. And so from a competency standpoint, we need to focus on what matters to this region and not just the institution. Because, and that's a new way of thinking, quite honestly, for us, is that externally, if we're going to make sure we have the careers that are necessary for students, is it's got to be in partnership. Right. And so we're developing that in real time. But I will say this, we have some really core competencies, criminal justice. We have the second largest criminal justice program in the country. we have just really amazing folks that go into that space. On all of the things you could think about from the political side of the house, we have a very strong competency there. I think we have an incredible business school and an incredible college of engineering. And I think a part of that is like I talked to lots of folks. Like we have construction management, for instance. And if you look at any of the builders out here, they are Sac State alums working in those companies. And we have an incredible group of from an engineering side that is going to go out and do things. And we don't have great facilities. And so one of the funny parts about it is, you know, as a fundraiser, is like we want to invest in our students. One of the best parts, though, is the grit and determination that comes from folks that don't have the best facility, right? That are working hard towards something bigger than themselves, that have a purpose. And so that's one of the through lines for us, is our students come to Sacramento State because I think they're purpose driven. I don't think they're from an engineering standpoint, we have incredible engineers that work, and they will compete with the best, quote unquote, top engineering students from around the country. You look at the team that does our racing team, right? That builds the cars and they compete with the Harvards, and they're competitive. And most people wouldn't think that. And the last thing I would say about it is, you mentioned this a little bit earlier about research. The research engine drives economies and and that's never been our focus. We've been the teaching institution. This last year, we became a Research 2 institution, which means we're doing a certain amount of research, which is a big deal. Only about the top 20% of institutions in the country reach that designation. And our goal is to be a Research 1 institution, like a Davis.
Okay.
Because it drives a lot of that innovation. And when we talk about this, it's our IP, right?
Yeah.
It's like, if you look at, I mean, the internet started at a college, at a university, like most great inventions started at a university, and then you have to go outside of it to scale it and build it and find a business case or a business use oftentimes. We need to have a strong research engine.
You bet.
Because we've talked about that at Carlson Center a little bit, and it was a little bit, I could tell that we as a institution generally is kind of at the infancy on figuring that out, but it's known that it's very, very important.
Yeah, and it's quite honestly, it's lucrative when you do it right. Mm-hmm. These are the types of investments when we talk about, you know, the investment the Carlson Center makes, and that, you know, the folks that are there, you're making these investments in local companies, and we need to start making those investments in our people. It's right. Our faculty and our students, and having that rev share opportunity for the latest breakthrough in a cancer drug can happen at Sac State.
We can spin these companies out of Sac State and make it good for everyone, including Sac State.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's definitely a focus of ours.
That's great. Okay. Yeah. So let me give you your closing thoughts, and maybe leave us with like a mic drop moment or something like that if you can, because you're a great speaker. Just drop the mic after you've been talking.
Well, you know, I think to the audience here, I think, you know, and to you, first of all, I want to say thank you for having me, because this has been fun, and it's fun to talk about all the great things that are happening in the region and at Sacramento State. But one of the things I think is critical is that we are here to be a partner, right? A partner with business, a partner with industry, a partner with our students. And I think we have a leadership team that says, let's ask a question before assuming we know the answer, right? And I think when we think about how higher education is going to move forward and some of the pitfalls of higher education and why, you know, the data is like, you know, half the country doesn't trust higher education, that is a fundamental flaw, because we haven't done enough to get our faculty, our administrators out into the community to talk about the partnership. And so I think when we talk about, you know, when you think about Sacramento State, we've been really having this message of being an economic engine, but it's an economic partner, right? And so, because if you look at thriving cities, they have thriving institutions. And we are a city that is continuously thriving, and we will continuously grow as we invest in higher education here in the region. But it's also, I think, an opportunity for us to elevate how we think about what's next for Sacramento. You know, one of the things that I think is incredible is, you know, when we talk about growth, there's always like this anti-growth side of the house, which is like, I don't want more traffic or more people or more anything. But what that does is it drives economies, right? And so we are actively pursuing growth that will help this region grow in lockstep. And the region's already growing. I mean, it's too late. I mean, the people moving here, the influx of folks. And so that's going to be for businesses. It's an opportunity we can't miss. Like, if you think about this for your business, you know, what will be the industry of the future here in 10 years? Like, that's what we're asking the question, and we want to make sure we're helping build it.
I love it. Yeah. Thanks for coming on the show.
I appreciate it. Mike. It's been fun. Thank you.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.